Hello, this is Wendy Bauer, returning with the Decatur Herald and Review, August 22nd, 2016. We continue now with death notices, beginning with funerals scheduled for today, Monday, August 22nd. Jeanette Rose Banning, 98, of Decatur, services at 11 a.m. in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Catherine G. Katie Bellows, 92, of Decatur, at 10 a.m. in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Anna K. Blaha, 81, of Amana, formerly of Hammond, services at 11 a.m. in United Methodist Church in Hammond. Leela Caroline Geisler, 97, of Stewardson, services at 10 a.m. in Trinity Lutheran Church, Stewardson. And the list of funerals pending for today, August 22nd, include Maxine Blair, 97, of Newton, who died Saturday, August 20th, 2016, arrangements by Meyer Funeral Home in Newton. Charlotte M. Hoffman, 80, of Blue Mound, died Saturday, August 20th, 2016, arrangements by Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Homes in Decatur. Diane McElroy, 62, of Decatur, died Saturday, August 20th, 2016. Arrangements by Walker Funeral Service and Chapel. Linda K. Vallier, 62, of Quincy, formerly of Decatur, died Friday, August 19th, 2016. Arrangements by Zehinder Robinson Stormer Cookson Funeral Home in Decatur. And now the obituaries. Jeanette Rose Banning of Decatur. Jeanette Rose Banning, 98, of Decatur, died Thursday, August 18th, 2016. Services will be at 11 a.m. Monday at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour before services. Burial will be at Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be sent to the Second Church of God. Albert Al Lee Cox, 73, of James City, Florida, formerly of Decatur, died on August 17, 2016, at Hope Hospice, Cape Coral, Florida. Celebration of Life will be held on Sunday, August 28, 2016, at 2 o'clock p.m. in the Moose Lodge, number 684, 3190 North Woodford Street in Decatur. In lieu of flowers, memorial gifts may be sent to the Moose Heart Charities, 155 South International Drive, Moose Heart, Illinois, 60539. Thomas Eugene Hector, Decatur. Thomas Eugene Hector, 68, of Decatur, passed away Friday, August 19, 2016, at Carl Foundation Hospital, Urbana. Services to celebrate Thomas's life will be at 1 p.m. Friday, August 26, 2016, in Moran and Goble Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Burial with military rites will follow in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Heart and Kidney Foundation. Carolyn R. Leka, Iliopolis. Carolyn R. Leka, 69, of Iliopolis, passed away on Thursday, August 18th, at her residence. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, August 23rd, 2016, at Fullenweider Park Funeral Home in Iliopolis. Funeral services will be at 10 o'clock a.m. on Wednesday, August 24th, 2016, at Iliopolis Christian Church. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made to the family of Carolyn R. Leka, care of Fullenweider Park Funeral Home. Genevieve O. Newsom Gowan of Decatur. Genevieve O. Newsom Gowan, 96, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, August 21st, 2016, in Decatur. Services to celebrate Genevieve's life will be at 2 p.m. Tuesday, August 23, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will follow in Fairlawn Cemetery. Hazel M. Patterson, Niantic. Hazel M. Patterson, 94, of Niantic, passed away at 6:49 a.m. on Saturday, August 20, 2016. Funeral services will be held Wednesday, August 24, at 11 a.m. in Niantic United Methodist Church, Niantic, Illinois. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to services at the church. Burial will be in Berea Cemetery, Mount Auburn, Illinois. Memorials may be given to Niantic United Methodist Church. Linda K. Glessner-Vallier, Decatur. Linda K. Glessner-Vallier, 62, of Quincy, died at 3:22 p.m. Friday, August 19, 2016, in Blessing Hospital. Funeral services will be held on Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock p.m. in Central Baptist Church, and burial will be in the Greenmount Cemetery in Quincy. Visitation will be Monday evening from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Zehender Robinson Stormer Cookson Funeral Home, and Tuesday afternoon from 1 o'clock until the time of services at Central Baptist Church. Memorials may be made to Central Baptist Church or the Quincy Humane Society. William E. Bill Off, Ivesdale. William E. Bill Off, 77, of Ivesdale, Illinois, passed away at 6:06 p.m. on Thursday, August 18, 2016, at the Presence Covenant Medical Center, Urbana, Illinois. Visitation will be held on Monday, August 22, 2016, from 5 p.m. until 8 p.m. at the St. Joseph's Catholic Church, Ivesdale, Illinois. Funeral Mass will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, August 23, 2016, also at the St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Military graveside rites will be given by the Albert Parker American Legion Post No. 620. Memorial contributions can be made to the Ivesdale Village to be used for the Ivesdale Ball Field. Robert K. Bandy, Decatur. Robert K. Bandy, 79, of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, August 18th, in his home. Honoring Robert's wishes, there will be no public services. Memorials are suggested to Macon County Animal Shelter. Jeanette Rose Banning, 98, Decatur. Jeanette Rose Banning, 98, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, August 18, 2016, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Jeanette's life will be at 11 a.m., Monday, August 22, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will follow in Graceland Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Second Church of God, Decatur. Dorothy M. Clater, Decatur. Dorothy M. Clater, 87, of Decatur, Illinois, died August 19, 2016. Funeral service will be held at Tabernacle Baptist Church, Decatur, Illinois, Wednesday, August 24, 2016, at 11 a.m. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m., Tuesday, August 23, 2016, also at the church. Burial will be in Point Pleasant Cemetery, Long Creek, Illinois. Memorials may be made to Tabernacle Baptist Church or to the Baptist Children's Home and Family Services in Carmi, Illinois. William R. Dotson, Decatur. William R. Dotson passed away on Thursday, August 18, 2016, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. funeral services to celebrate William Bill's life will be at 11 a.m. Wednesday, August 24th, 2016, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to the services. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery and conclude with military honors conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Memorials are suggested to God's Shelter of Love or Macon County Honor Guard. Clyde Dean Folk, Decatur. Clyde Dean Folk, 83, of Decatur, passed away August 18, 2016, in Memorial Medical Center, Springfield, Illinois. Funeral services will be held Tuesday, August 23rd at 10 o'clock a.m. at First Free Will Baptist Church, Decatur, Illinois. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. on Monday, August 22nd at the church. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park, Decatur, Illinois. And now we will return to the local news. Rob Stroud, Lee News Service writer, writes, "Run for the Fallen, absolutely worth it." This is from Mattoon. The memory of the 255 Illinois service members who have given their lives in Afghanistan and Iraq was strong during Saturday's annual Run for the Fallen. Army National Guard Specialist Conlon Muir ran around the track at Charleston High School while wearing his fatigues and carrying his 35-pound gear pack. Muir said he was completing his goal of running 10 miles and planned to continue running after taking a brief break. "It's rough on the body, but it's absolutely worth it," Muir said. "It's for my fallen brothers. It's a big tribute for them, and I want to be part of it." Each participant in the 7th Run for the Fallen ran or walked a mile around the track, planted a U.S. flag on the field, and rang the bell there in memory of a service member. Muir said it meant a lot to him to see so many civilians in the crowd taking part in this memorial. Charleston residents John and Jenny Sipes brought their children, Anna, 14, and Josh, 11. The family members were given note cards with names and biographical information of fallen service members in whose memory they could walk. Jenny Sipes said they attended the Run for the Fallen for the first time last year. "I think it's an experience that everyone should take part in to show we remember the people who fought for us," Anna Sipes said. Army veteran Lindsay Figgins of Charleston, who served in Afghanistan from 2008 to 2009, participated alongside her family, including her children, Jarrett, 11, and Christina, 13. Figgins said she appreciates that the event has created an opportunity for the community to remember fallen veterans. "I lost friends over there," Figgins said of her service in Afghanistan. Nick and Brittany James of Mattoon returned to the Run for the Fallen with their 6-year-old son. Brittany James said this was the 4th year that Noah, her son, has taken part in the run, and the 2nd that he has worn his child-sized helmet and camouflage fatigues. Brittany said Noah looks up to his uncle, who is a Marine. Nick added that Noah collects patches from service members and places them on a wall of heroes in his bedroom. Noah said he loves taking part in the Run for the Fallen every year because it's for our heroes who died. The run is organized by local volunteers with support from the Charleston Parks and Recreation Department. Donations are accepted for the Chez Family Foundation Center for Wounded Veterans at the University of Illinois. And from the opinion page, an editorial by Deborah Saunders for the Herald and Review. Who fact-checks the fact-checkers? In 2009, the fact-checking organization PolitiFact, run by the St. Petersburg Times, now the Tampa Bay Times, won a Pulitzer Prize for its coverage of the 2008 election. But I don't think PolitiFact is likely to emerge from 2016 with its credibility intact. A recent NBC News poll showed that a mere 11% of voters would describe Clinton as honest and trustworthy. Yet, in a complete repudiation of public sentiment, PolitiFact's rating for Hillary Clinton finds her statements are true, or mostly true, half the time. Half true, 22% of the time, and false or mostly false, 26% of the time. But pants on fire false, only 2% of the time. Donald Trump did not fare so well. PolitiFact rated 19% of his statements pants on fire false. Given Trump's cavalier approach to facts, I assume he earned the bad rating, but I cannot say the same for Clinton and PolitiFact's generous assessment of her veracity. Clinton's campaign has been plagued with the general impression that she has lied repeatedly about her decision to use a homebrew server for State Department emails, as well as her assertion that the decision was done not to keep public information from public scrutiny, but for the sake of convenience. Clinton said it was allowed. Not completely true. She said other secretaries of state did likewise, when no other secretary of state exclusively used a private server. Clinton said that she handed over all of her work-related emails to the State Department. FBI Director James Comey testified before Congress that thousands were not returned. PolitiFact editor Angie Drobnik-Holen told me that her organization purposefully didn't rate statements that we couldn't verify. Once Comey came forward, the factual record got much richer, and PolitiFact acted accordingly. And our main goal here with the ratings is not to punish or reward politicians, but to tell our readers what we know and what we don't know. PolitiFact never rated Clinton's public statements in which she linked an awful internet video with a Benghazi terrorist attack. It wasn't clear at the time if it was true or false, Holen explained. In October 2012 on CNN, Clinton blamed the fog of war for her video remarks. CNN's Jake Tapper, however, determined for factcheck.org that Hillary Clinton contributed to that false impression, even though the State Department and Hillary Clinton seemed to know from the beginning that this was a terrorist attack. I have sympathy for PolitiFact's efforts to rule down the middle, but when its decisions lead to glowing numbers for a candidate who can't seem to tell the truth, it has to rethink how it operates. When I look at Clinton's high truthfulness score, I can't help but wonder if the verdict is, forgive me, rigged. And Kathleen Parker for the Herald and Review. Conway teaches Trump new tricks. When my syndicate editor told me a few clients had been asking, don't you have anyone over there who can write something positive about Donald Trump? I thought, well, that could be fun, but hard. Then, as if the muses and fates had conspired to help me in this Olympian task, everything in Trump world changed. Not only did Trump's campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, resign following reports of his involvement in Ukrainian politics, but Trump hired a woman, Kellyanne Conway, to become his new campaign manager. And he suddenly started being nice. Call it a woman's touch or the desperation of a faltering candidate, but Trump was even kind of cute Thursday when he expressed regret for some of his ill-chosen words during the campaign, especially those that might have caused personal pain, presumably in others. What's next, a prayer for forgiveness of sins? If his comments weren't strictly an apology, they at least were an acknowledgement of error. They also indicated that Trump can learn new tricks. He's trainable and apparently is open to ideas not his own. Clearly, this was a tectonic plate-shifting moment in a campaign previously defined by insult and ignorance. Sometimes I can be too honest, he said, brilliantly setting up his opponent's fatal flaw. Hillary Clinton is the exact opposite. She never tells the truth. It's no coincidence that Conway, a veteran of the anti-Clinton wars, is also a pollster. Who better to turn things around than someone who pays her bills by measuring the public's temper? More important, Conway specializes in women voters. Her firm, The Polling Company, Inc./Woman Trend, has monitored women's thinking on a wide variety of issues since 1995. Her handiwork, which previously has included telling Republicans to stop using the four-letter word rape in campaigns, is in clear evidence with her newest client. Which means, I suppose, that this positive Trump column is really about Conway. Will her magic work to shift women and swing voters toward Trump? Which is the real Trump, the guy who insults everybody, or the one who almost says he's sorry and wants to bring the country together? Can he sustain this new persona, and for how long? Attention span isn't his strong suit, but then neither is America's. We are still soon to the pivot, so we'll wait and see. Unless Trump has been projecting someone else in the past year just to capture the conservative, white, male voter who was never going to vote for Clinton anyway, there's every reason to believe his impetuousness will prevail. Moreover, it's questionable whether voters can be swayed by a sudden personality change, even among those who readily grant second chances to the penitent. Will women suddenly forget everything Trump has said while being too honest? Will African Americans buy Trump's promise that their lives will be amazing if they vote for him? Will the seed Trump planted of Clinton's bigotry, seeing blacks only as votes, take root? Such a statement from any other Republican would burst into flames from the volatile combination of hypocrisy and absurdity, but nearly everyone understands that Trump isn't really a Republican. The outsider, non-politician who regrets saying hurtful words, who is sometimes too honest, but will never lie to the people, may surprise us. At least he has offered a sliver of decency to those looking for something to cling to, a little humility, a smattering of remorse, a human connection to help them justify voting for anybody but Clinton. Trump has been losing ground essentially because of the cumulative effect of his persistent nastiness. And to this, his off-the-cuff remarks about maybe using nukes, leaving NATO to its own resources, his praise of dictators and strongmen, and he was someone you wouldn't want anywhere near the football. Or oneself, a Washington Post editorial page editor, Fred Hyatt, wrote so brilliantly, saying Trump was the person you hoped wouldn't be seated next to you at a dinner party. On the other hand, I've long admired the sentiment popularized by Alice Roosevelt Longworth, if you can't say something good about someone, sit right here by me. Who better than Trump? The man is funny, even at his meanest. What many have found repugnant about his style was indeed the secret to his success. People love hearing said aloud what they're really thinking. But that was then, and for now at least, it appears to be Conway's show. No more insults, stick to the script, focus on Clinton's dishonesty. It just might work. And from the At Work page, going to college is worth it, study finds. This is by a Tribune News Service writer, Gail Marks-Javis. A new study provides a dramatic answer to the question nagging potential college students. Is college worth it? The short answer is yes, according to a study from the Georgetown University Center on Education and the Workforce. For the first time in U.S. history, people with college degrees make up a larger portion of the workforce than those with high school diplomas, the report found. And the recovery from the 2007-2009 recession has barely made a dent in bringing back the jobs people with high school diplomas used to count on for decent pay and benefits. Although the economy has created 11.6 million new jobs since the recession, 11.5 million have gone to workers with at least some education beyond high school, says Anthony Carnival, director of the center and author of the study done with the Tamara Jayasundara and Artem Gulish. In addition, workers with some post-secondary education have captured the vast majority of the good jobs, the researchers said. They define good jobs as those that are full-time, pay more than $53,000 a year, and provide benefits such as health insurance and retirement plans. Workers with bachelor degrees or higher now make up 36% of the workforce. The workers with high school diplomas are less than 34% of the workforce. That's down 5 percentage points from 2007, when the economy began to crash. Of the 7.2 million jobs lost in the recession, about 5.6 million of the jobs that vanished had been held by people with high school diplomas or less. And they have recovered only 1% of those jobs over the past 6 years, the researchers note. Only 80,000 jobs held by workers with high school diplomas or less have been added since the recession. There has been no growth of well-paying jobs with benefits for the group that didn't go beyond high school, Carnival said. The result has been an increasingly divided country with college haves and college have-nots, he said. The people with college degrees have incomes that have averaged 80% more than high school graduates over a lifetime. The nation still is feeling the hangover from the recession. The economy still is missing 6 million jobs that would have been created if the recession hadn't occurred, he said. And construction employment is still 1.6 million jobs short of its 2007 level, while manufacturing has 1 million fewer jobs. Construction and manufacturing in the past have provided some of the best jobs for workers at lower educational levels. But Carnival does not see the current job and income divide as a short-term issue resulting from the rough years set in motion by the recession. While the recession sped up job losses in industries such as manufacturing, Carnival has traced the erosion of opportunity for people without college degrees to the 1980s. Many jobs require more elaborate skills than they once did. For example, he said a person with a high school diploma used to make a fine auto mechanic if he had good mechanical skills. Now, computers are key to operating cars, so mechanics need electronic skills as well. The same applies to the factory floor. The growth in jobs now is in healthcare, consulting, business, education, government, and financial services. Those industries account for 28% of the workforce in 1947 and now account for 46%, the researchers noted. Yet, old-style job service such as clerical work have been cut sharply because computers now make it possible for managers to do their own typing and take on responsibilities once done by clerical staff. Carnival said critics of college did not seem to realize that people with high school diplomas or less had unemployment rates about 22%. Also, workers who had graduated from college lost about $5,000 a year in wages compared to $6,000 for those with no college. Now, Carnival said, income data make it clear that if you don't go to college, you will do a lot worse. But while true on average, people evaluating future education need to see choices as more complex than simply going to college or not going to college. Jobs for workers with high school diplomas or less declined by 13%, with a loss of 7.3 million jobs. And the photo accompanying this article, Natisha Brantley, Shakia West, and Kayla Kelso, all Eastern Illinois University students, help incoming students and their parents move into Ford Hall. And this has been Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, August 22, 2016. I look forward to reading with you again soon.